6 minutes past 11 o'clock. Good morning, I'm John Raby, sitting in for Gary Eichten. This is the first hour of Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. First things first, it's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N, but it's pronounced Munson, as in Dan Munson, the new head coach of the Minnesota Gopher basketball team, the former head coach of Gonzaga. Munson brought his team to the Western Regional Finals last year in just his second year as head coach. He signed a 7-year contract this weekend worth about $500,000 a year. Not bad for a 37-year-old guy. Munson takes over a troubled program, one faced with accusations of academic fraud and sexual violence when his head coach Clem Haskins left under a cloud, a program that could face sanctions from the NCAA when it does its investigation. We're talking about Munson and basketball at the University of Minnesota in this hour of Midday. Coach Munson actually busy now looking for assistant coaches and so on for his new job. He can't join us, but we do have Mark Dienhart with us, U of M's athletic director. Mr. Dienhart, good to talk with you. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, John.
Our phone numbers, if you'd like to join this conversation, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000, or 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828, the toll-free line. And this morning, in this hour, we don't need to just talk, the politics of this selection. We also want to talk about basketball and how the coach will coach the team and what you're looking for in the Gophers. So don't think that we don't want to talk about what's going to be happening on the playing court, as well as what may have been happening behind the scenes and so on. Sound good to you, Mark Dienhart?
That sounds just fine.
Good. How much is riding on this choice of Munson as head coach?
Well, there's always a lot riding on a selection like this. The last two head coaches we had in the basketball program were in the saddle for 12 and 13 years. So when you make a decision like this, you're not just affecting the current players on the team or one generation of fans. You're likely to affect a lot of people over a long period of time. And that's why it takes a while to figure out who the best fit might be, aside from the complications associated with this search.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Given the cloud, how much more is at stake?
Well, I don't know. The cloud in this particular case includes a bunch of different factors. It includes the potential sanctions, which really I suspect will not be imposed by the NCAA, but they will be self-imposed, and we'll hope that it's consistent with what the NCAA would expect as self-corrective measures, and that likely will take place. We'll likely impose those once the investigation is done in September or October. The search was conducted very late in the year, and that's after coaches have recruited an incoming class and have got their assistant coaches ready for a coming season. And there are a variety of things that would keep coaches from wanting to be interested in this type of a search at this late a date. When this has happened in the past in the Big Ten, it's been more typical that an interim coach has been put in place, and then you lose a year of recruiting until there's a permanent replacement done. So I do think that there's a great fit between Dan Munson and what we need, and I think that it's fortunate that we were able to find him in this environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, give me some idea why you picked him.
Well, he's young. He'll have to grow with the program. We will have a couple of years where we're recovering from this trauma, and we have to reestablish the soul of the program. He has the youth and enthusiasm to get through that. In fact, he had to deal with something very similar to this when he was an assistant coach at Gonzaga. And he has the toughness to do that. He is considered to be among the very best floor coaches in the country. To have a top 20 program a year ago at Gonzaga and to have another one coming back this year is quite frankly amazing. Gonzaga would beat University of Washington by 20 points this past year, and Washington State couldn't stay close to them. So putting him in an environment like the Big Ten is, I think, it gives us a chance for competitive success. But he also has a very solid track record for academic achievement among his players. Admission standards to Gonzaga are somewhat selective. He has to deal with recruiting students who can be successful there, and he frankly has good rapport with student athletes. His age is a factor with that. The fact that his father was a head coach and Division I basketball and that he has a certain toughness about him, I think, is appealing. All those were factors. Plus, he just wanted the job. He very much wanted to be here at Minnesota.
What about, though, the... do we want to call it inexperience? Just a couple of years as head coach. I mean, he's had other experience, of course. But.
Well, you could call it inexperience, but when you've got a record like his, where you're 57 and 12 or whatever his numbers are, and you've taken a team to the NIT and a team to the NCAA, and you've beaten, like last year, Gophers and Stanford and Florida and lost to UConn by the eventual national champs by 5 points. I guess the way I looked at that is that it's a good thing we're chasing him now rather than chasing him a year from now when his team is back in the NCAA, which it's likely to be. I think they're ranked 12th in the preseason polls because now I think he wants this job and is interested in it. A year from now, there might be an opening that would be more attractive than ours.
What did he tell you about why he wanted the job?
He grew up around Division I college basketball. His dad was a head coach. He always saw this as the pinnacle of the profession. After last year, he felt that that he was ready to take the next step where he could compete at the same level his team did at Gonzaga on a regular basis. But he wasn't sure that the resources at the school would allow him to do that, and he wanted to return to the Big Ten. He remembered growing up surrounding the Michigan State teams his dad coached, and felt that this was an excellent opportunity. He's a good friend of Steve Alford, who is the new coach at Iowa, and Steve Alford told him what a good opportunity this would be for a coach of his age.
Yeah, is he getting a leg up because of the cloud that we talked about earlier?
Well, I think he's getting... I think people in Minnesota have traditionally been patient. When you look at the types of crowds that follow our football program, there's some reason for it now with Glenn Mason doing what he's doing, but those people have been there for years looking for a resurgence of our football program, and there has been patience in the community, and I think people will be patient with Dan. Again, anybody who saw his team a year ago probably thinks of him in the same way I think of Don Lucia. You couldn't watch a Colorado College hockey team and not think that Don Lucia is special, and I think they believe that Dan is special. It may be a while before he has the special types of players to do everything he wants, though, here at Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. It is 14 minutes past 11 o'clock. Mark Dienhart, the athletic director of the University of Minnesota, is on the line. And I'd like you to call up and ask your questions of Mark Dienhart about Dan Munson, the new Gopher basketball coach. It's a good time to... Well, to talk about what you think about the cloud, as I keep describing it, hanging over the U's athletics, and to tell us what you want out of a Gopher basketball coach. 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000, or 1-800-242-2828, the toll-free line, 1-800-242-2828. Actually, when I asked my previous question about him getting a leg up, I was wondering more about whether Munson would have had a chance of getting this job if there hadn't been the cloud hanging over the U's athletic department and if Clem hadn't had to leave.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was asked to interview for no less than 7 positions this year, including the University of Notre Dame opening. He did not interview for all of those, but he was a distinctly hot commodity. The reason we didn't talk with him until this point in the search is that he was coaching a World University Games team in Spain until just a week ago. So I don't know that if you look at this situation, you could say that he's getting a leg up in that regard. I do think that we're fortunate to have him, and I think that people will appreciate his directness and his authenticity. He is he's a very warm and genuine type of person.
Is he a better choice than Terry Holland?
Well, in my judgment, he is for the reason that he desperately wanted to be here. There's something about wanting the job that you simply can't replace. I respect Terry Holland and think a great deal of him, but in the end, I think Terry Holland was unsure as to whether he wanted to be here because he needed to have just the right type of assistant coaches in place to take the job, And in the end, I would have believed that Dan was the choice we needed simply because he was motivated to be here and was willing to go out and find the type of staff he needed. And there's nothing that can replace that in my view.
Yeah, it's a little more fun to work with.
Well, it is, and it's also funner. It's a little more fun to watch a person like that do their job in an environment where you are recruiting 18 and 19 year old players and running around the country, making sure you know what the talent levels are and having to chase down their backgrounds and make sure that you're making good choices. I think energy is an important thing, and energy is not so much a function of age as it is a function of your motivation, and it's very clear that Dan is highly motivated.
Let's go to Dave on the line from Minneapolis. Hi, Dave.
Hi. You want my question?
Please.
Okay, I'd like Mr. Dinert to comment on his thoughts of sanctions or perhaps pending sanctions following the coach, or for that matter, athletic directors, should they take positions at different universities, and whether or not he's working on that at a national level with the NCAA.
Sure. What do you mean, Dave, by sanctions following?
Well, if Clem perhaps takes a position at another university, he appears to be doing that without any of the penalties that may be coming towards the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, the issue is whether the coach, the individual who was involved in breaking rules, ought to be penalized, or whether the institution ought to be penalized. I think it's that discussion has been taking place on a national level, and I'll address that. But I think the first thing to address is that, and I think this is important, no matter what people may believe, the reason why the president and Clem Haskins decided to disassociate themselves had a lot to do with the president's feeling that Coach Haskins couldn't lead the program forward. It didn't have to do with the fact that there had been any violations, any NCAA violations that could be connected with Coach Haskins at this point. And so it would be unfair to use that as an example. There is a feeling that the individuals, coaches, and others who violate rules walk away scot-free, and the school is penalized, where a coach could simply move to another institution and move on with their career. An example of that might be the Jim Herrick situation, where he went from UCLA to Rhode Island, and UCLA obviously was dealing with the penalties when he was competing at another institution. And I think there's some, in my own view, there is something compelling about that argument. This situation at the University of Minnesota, which you've called a cloud, and it certainly is that, involved, we know it involved four student athletes, and it may have involved two individuals, but because of that, there are 395 student athletes on the men's side who are being painted with a very broad brush, and a bunch of the rest of us who are going to suffer when these penalties are imposed, and the folks who are directly involved in having violated the NCAA rules will walk away from this with no penalty to pay, either from an NCAA standpoint or from a legal standpoint or from a university standpoint.
Well, who are they, the ones involved that won't pay the penalty?
Well, it would be the academic people who were employed by academic counseling, who ultimately either did the work for the student athletes or who arranged for the work to be done. And those individuals obviously have no penalty to pay in this particular case.
Well, but you also said that, so you don't think Clem Haskins bears responsibility for this?
No, what I said was that Clem Haskins obviously is not coaching the team, which is what he wanted to do this coming year, because he and the president decided that was not something that could happen and then have the university's best interest at stake. But in the end, the investigation hasn't been able to connect him directly to any NCAA violations. If it had, he would have been terminated for cause and there would have been no payment made to him.
Well, it's not enough to say that it happened on his watch.
Well, it happened on the president's watch, too. It happened in my watch. It happened on Nils Hasselmo's watch. It happened on the watch of a compliance director. It happened on the watch of an academic director of academic counseling. It happened on the watch of a lot of people. And in the end, if anything goes wrong within an organization, you can ultimately have a reason for then dispatching anybody who happens to be a superior to the person who made the mistake, if you want to follow that logic.
Well, how far up should it go?
Well, that's a question that certainly anybody can answer, but given their own preferences. But it'd be hard to say that it should extend to people who simply didn't know that it was taking place and did all the right things to try to make sure that programs of compliance were in place and that people operated in an honest way. If somebody were to say that President Yudof ought to be dispatched because these violations took place while he was president of the University of Minnesota, I don't think that's fair. Look at the football program and look at...
But wouldn't they hold Nils Hasselmo more responsible than Mark Yudof, who's only been there a year?
Well, he's been here over 2 years now, and the violations took place during both of their periods of time and probably equal numbers of years. And again, that's, I guess, what I'm saying is that it seems to me to be pretty ridiculous to make an argument that if you look at 90% of the student athletes and the way they perform and academically, and it's all absolutely done the right way, and it's done the right way because the right people are in place and the right management systems are working. Then why dispatch the president because there was a mistake made at a level where he couldn't be aware of what was going on, and everything else is working fine? There is, at some point, there's individual accountability. This doesn't exist in other programs because Jane Gangelhoff did the work for student athletes when she wasn't asked to do the work, and she admits that. And it started when she came to the University of Minnesota. It ended when I disassociated her from the University of Minnesota.
It's 23 minutes past 11 o'clock. You're listening to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. John Ravy sitting in for Gary Acton. And Mark Dienhart is our guest. He's University of Minnesota Athletic Director. Call up. Join the conversation. 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828 over the weekend. A guy named Dan Munson, the head coach at Gonzaga, signed on to become the University of Minnesota basketball coach, taking over from Clem Haskins. Mr. Munson will get about $500,000 a year. He signed a 7-year contract. Call and let us know whether you think this will help the University of Minnesota, whether you like the choice. 651-227-6000 in the Twin Cities or 1-800-242-2828. Tom Power, did you see Tom Power's column in the Pioneer Press? Where he wrote that Munson is a plain vanilla choice, safe, middle of the road, non-threatening, no baggage.
Well, I didn't see the column, and plain vanilla is something that would have been easy to get. There are plenty of mid-major coaches in the country who would be interested in taking this job. In my view, people could say that Coach Munson is something of a risk because he's only been a head coach for 2 years. I think it's a good risk, but I've never heard anybody describe a coach who took a program like Gonzaga into the top 8 in the country and now has a team in the top 12 in the preseason ratings as being vanilla. I think most people would say a coach that can do that is a cut above the other 300 Division I coaches in the country.
Yeah. The no baggage part's pretty important, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there are plenty of coaches with no baggage out there, too. I think that when you talk about who can come into a program where there is tremendous pressure to win, like there is in a Big Ten program, and make sure that it's done exactly the right way, what you're looking for is individual characteristics that can be passed along to the players, the student athletes, and used in the recruiting process. And I can only say that I think when you meet Dan Munson, you begin to realize he is not an ordinary guy. He is not He's not vanilla. He's not a choice that lacks the sort of sizzle you would want a person to have, and I mean by that extraordinary characteristics that allow him to lead the program.
Let's go to Jay on the line from Sioux Falls. Jay, welcome to Midday.
Yeah, I'd have to say that just tuned into the program, but listening to the AD there try and tell us that Clem Haskins had no knowledge what was going on, I just think is absolutely ludicrous. First of all, if he had really no knowledge of what his student-athletes were supposedly doing, then that in itself is a statement of the condition. Secondly, if he wants to extrapolate that to the AD and the president of the university, I think there's some culpability for all, and I find this situation that Clem Haskins has just been paid off and gone, and we're supposed to believe that there was nothing to tie him at this time to an NCAA violation. That is the most ludicrous position I think I've ever heard.
Well, hold on. Don't hang up, Jay. And Mr. Dienhart, what do you think?
Well, you can take whatever position you want in terms of your personal opinion, but the the investigation is being conducted by Bond, Shenick, and King, a firm from Kansas City, with a lead attorney named Mike Glazier, who has appeared before the NCAA's Infractions Committee more time than any single individual, and is tremendously knowledgeable about this stuff. And he's the guy who, over the course of the last 4 months, has been conducting the investigation. I'm not giving my opinion. I'm giving you what the results of the investigation were and upon which the president based his decision. I guarantee you that it would have been a lot easier on me if Coach Haskins had been fired for cause and I had no financial obligation to him. As it stands, I have $1.5 million that I have to deal with in terms of the departmental obligation to Coach Haskins. And nobody was going to pay that money unless it was felt that, from an institutional standpoint, the institution was obligated to it.
Well, Jay, let me ask you, Jay, what do you do if, in your position here, you just kind of, you're pretty sure that Mr. Haskins had knowledge, but nobody has been able to prove so far that he did? You know, what's the university supposed to do?
Well, in that situation, I guess I might reverse the question and say, so further down the line, then if evidence does come forward that Clem Haskins had knowledge, and quite frankly, a reasonable and prudent person would be expected to believe that Clem had some relation to his student athletes and what they were supposedly doing and how they were remaining eligible for the athletic program. If evidence does come to light down the road, does that mean that the university recovers that money and that Clem Haskins is then subject to some sanctions from the NCAA?
Well, Clem Haskins isn't subject to sanctions from the NCAA if he's not employed by an institution that's governed by the NCAA, and he obviously currently is not. Since I didn't negotiate the terms of Clem's departure from the university, I don't know what would happen down the road. That was something that was done with the general counsel's office. What I can say is that there is a separate academic counseling unit at the University of Minnesota, specifically for these conflict of interest reasons that have been hashed over for the last 3 months, that's supposed to be involved in dealing with students, with their performance in the classroom, their choices, with their homework, their tutors, and everything else. The coach is not supposed to be the individual who is arranging for tutors. He's not supposed to be the individual who is monitoring their work in the classroom. It's supposed to be the academic counselors, the director of academic counseling, and the tutors. And that's obviously where this system fell apart, because there was an academic counselor, perhaps, and a tutor, certainly, who obviously weren't doing what they were supposed to do, and they didn't report to Clem Haskins.
There are a couple of points in Mr. Munson's contract that I think seem to address this issue. One is money for or incentives for academic performance on the part of his students, and the other is a much, in Mr. Udoff's phrase, a much more defined for cause clause.
Yeah, the contract that Clem Haskins had was unique. I don't know again how all of the particulars about how it came about, but there is an expectation that the coach will supervise and the general behaviors of students in every area, and that really does take place. And that the coach will take responsibility, in addition to what goes on in academic counseling, for the academic achievement and progress of student athletes. And that was written into this agreement. It was discussed thoroughly with Coach Munson before he went ahead and signed the contract. And it's really what exists in the contracts of coaches like Glenn Mason and Don Lucia and other people I've hired.
Mm-hmm. So how strong is it? What kind of incentive is there? Is it a monetary incentive?
No, there's a monetary incentive to improve graduation rates and to make sure that GPAs are improving. But there is a clause that would simply, if this took place again, for instance, what we've gone through took place again, the coach would be held accountable. The coach would not be in a position of saying, that's something I shouldn't have known, didn't need to know. It's not spelled out in my contract. The folks who dealt with academic issues were outside of my area of supervision, and I can't be held responsible for that.
We're going to get news in just a minute. I'm a little bit interested, though, in the incentive. Is there, for instance, an amount of money he will get if the grade points go up on average by, 0.5 or something?
Well, the incentive is really for the graduation rate, because okay. You can have high GPAs and not graduate student athletes, and it really mirrors the incentives that are in place for coaches to go to the NCAA playoffs and do well in the playoffs, or go to a bowl game and do well in a bowl game. So,
but how much money would he get?
Well, it depends on what the graduation rate might be, but he could earn as much as a $50,000 bonus if he was able to move the graduation rates up to between 75% and 100%, for instance. And the overall student graduation rate at the University of Minnesota is in the 50% range, just below the 50% range. The athletic department graduation rates are over 60%, but they can be a lot better, and that's something that in basketball is an issue around the country. The average graduation rate for Division I basketball players around the country is just under 40%.
We're talking with Mark Dienhart, and we'd like to bring you into the conversation. 651-227-6000 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000, or 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Dan Munson, the new choice as the Gopher basketball coach. What do you think of that decision? And we'll get news from Greta Cunningham in just a moment.
I'm Lorna Benson on Mondays, All Things Considered, the story of two brothers who were healing patients with surgery more than 100 years ago in a small frontier town called Rochester, Minnesota.
The huge tumor was a degenerating thyroid. The patient's condition was precarious, and I knew that whatever happened, the tumor must come out.
The Mayo Brothers, the next in our Minnesota Century series. That's Monday on All Things Considered, weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio.
A toast to iodine on All Things Considered. It is 11:33, and Greta Cunningham has the latest news.
Good morning, John. Serb villagers in central Kosovo town are mourning the deaths of 14 Serb farmers found brutally beaten in their fields. The Serbs held private vigils yesterday and are waiting for autopsies before burying the dead. The Serbs blame ethnic Albanians for the attack. Some people who attended Woodstock 99 say they're disgusted at the way the concert ended with fires and violence. Riot police had to be called in last night. It took several hours to contain the fires, but police say most were out by early this morning, and most concertgoers had left the festival grounds. Officials are keeping a close watch on a 16,000-acre wildfire in central Montana. It's threatening the small ranch town of Musselshell. The main concern is shifting winds. In regional news, protesters and police officers are preparing for a noontime demonstration near the planned Highway 55 reroute site in Minneapolis. Opponents of the project say they'll try to prevent Minnesota Department of Transportation crews from starting construction today. Dozens of police officers and state troopers are busy roping off areas where the construction is scheduled to begin. Opponents of the Highway 55 reroute say the project will go through a sacred Indian burial ground and damage the environment. State officials say archaeological and historical studies have found no evidence of an Indian burial ground there. They say the project is needed to handle the volume of traffic and reduce accidents on Highway 55. About 6,000 Northern States power customers are still without power after thunderstorms rumbled through the Twin Cities area overnight following a weekend of sweltering heat. An NSP spokeswoman said at the peak about 11,000 NSP customers in the metro area lost power due to lightning strikes and other storm damage. But several hundred of those were customers who lost their power earlier in heat-related outages. NSP says all power should be restored by sometime tonight. The forecast for Minnesota today calls for mostly sunny skies, less humid today, with high temperatures near 75 in the north to 95 in the south. Clear skies statewide tonight with lows ranging from 45 in the north to 60 in the south. At this hour, mostly sunny skies reported around the region. Rochester reports sunshine in 75. It's sunny in Duluth in 72. St. Cloud reports sunny skies in 77. And in the Twin Cities, mostly sunny skies, a temperature of 81, a dew point of 70. John, that's a look at the latest news.
Thank you very much, Minnesota Public Radio's Greta Cunningham. We're talking with Mark Dienhart, University of Minnesota Athletic Director, about the choice of Dan Munson as the new head basketball coach replacing Clem Haskins. We need your call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. And Mr. Dienhart, if you can hold on for just a second, we're going to hear what Jay Wiener had to say this morning about the choice picking Dan Munson as a new head basketball coach. Bob Potter spoke with him, with Jay Wiener, who is a sports writer for the Star Tribune and our sports commentator, too. And he asked him if history is repeating itself when it comes to coaches who say academics are important in big-time athletics.
Well, you know, Bob, we're so old that we can recall those days when Clem Haskins was hired, which was 13 years ago when I went into the archives of the Star Tribune and got these quotes, and tell me if these are Dan Munson or if they're Clem Haskins. He says, "I'm a guy who believes in the student-athlete. If you just recognize the athlete and not the student-athlete, sooner or later you'll head down the wrong path."
Munson.
Wrong.
Oh,
Clem Haskins. How about this quote? "I can't replay the past. I'm going to look ahead."
Clem.
Well, pretty close. It was Clem. But Munson on Saturday said, "As far as I'm concerned, this probation is a thing of the past. We have to go forward."
Oh, my.
They must have had the same scriptwriter, huh? I guess the point is this. Fundamentally, college sports is corrupt, okay? College basketball really hasn't changed over those 13 years. And if you remember, the reason that Clem Haskins was hired was to reinvigorate a program that had been fallen into the abyss of scandal because of an alleged rape in which the players were in the end acquitted. Now we've got a second scandal that's layered. One is academic fraud, and the other is sexual violence within the program. And basically what the leaders of the athletic program, including the president of the university, are doing is trying to a certain extent, I think, create a buzz around the program to let people think that they can forget about the scandal. However, the scandal is going to come back in September when the university hands over its own report to the NCAA. And then there's going to be another 6 months of waiting until the NCAA makes its report. I think beyond the fact that the words are so similar to 86 is the fact that, like the Haskins hiring, the same athletic administrators are still in place for the new hiring. While Mark Dienhart and Mac Boston are, you know, two generally fine men with two good job histories, we don't know what their fate is going to be out of this thing. And yet Dienhart was clearly scrambling. He was in charge of the hiring process, and Boston was involved too. And I just don't think that President Udoff, Mark Udoff, who I believe has sort of gotten a free ride through this thing and been praised for quick action, I just don't think that he would have hired a law school dean or a business school dean this quickly, being his sixth choice, and then paying him $490,000 a year when he's got 2 years, really, of head coaching experience. So what am I saying? I think that because college basketball in this town is so popular and because people really enjoy the team when it wins, we have a tendency to forget how history has repeated itself. And I think that we should sort of hold on, and I wish, frankly, that they wouldn't have hired a full-time coach right now. They would have gone to interim, but my own theory is they should have shut the program down for a couple of years and just let all the dust settle.
Oh, yeah, but if they did that, think of the economic consequences, because basketball raises so much money for all the other activities, all the other sports at the university.
Well, this heads on to a long, long discussion, really, about how college sports should be funded. But I think the key issue is this, is that basketball went astray because it was allowed to be on its own island. You know, we know that the academic program, the academic counseling program, was its own program separate from the rest of men's athletics. I really think that President Udoff should have taken a real hard look at exactly how sports is funded and a fundamental study of whether college sports should be funded separately and should be self-supporting.
Let me go back very quickly to something you said earlier. If Boston and Dienhart were to be replaced, would that make any significant difference?
I think it would send a signal that the men who were in charge at the time of the scandal should also go. Again, they're fine men who've done good work. But as much as we knew about Clem Haskins, I think we know as much about Mark Dienhart and Mac Boston. But no, it wouldn't make a fundamental difference. Mark Udoff has to become a national leader for college sports reform, and instead, I think he's ducked by just hiring a new coach.
That's NPR sports commentator and Star Tribune sports writer Jay Wiener speaking this morning with Minnesota Public Radio's Morning Edition host Bob Potter. Mr. Dienhart is on the line for the next 15 minutes or so as we wrap up midday on Minnesota Public Radio, and I'm not quite sure, Mr. Dienhart, where you'd like to start first. Do you want to start with Jay Wiener's comment that college sports is corrupt?
Well, I respect Jay Wiener. He's a bright guy. He also has an axe to grind that Division I athletics, because of the economics, isn't worth a hill of beans. And you know, I could come out and say something very general, like the media is corrupt. And I don't think that would further the discussion at all. There are corrupt people in Division I college athletics, and there are corrupt people in the media. and to shut the program down for 2 years and let Kevin Nathaniel and his 4-point GPA go somewhere else to play basketball, and let J.B. Bickerstaff and his 3.75 GPA go someplace else, reduce the number of minority opportunities on this campus available to kids who are first-generation college students. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I think if rather than trying to create these broad generalizations and trying to respond in some way to the hysteria that has been created by the media in some ways, Jay would want to analyze it further. I think what he would say is that it is not the case that athletics is self-supporting. The university provides a good chunk of support to athletics, particularly women's athletics, and provides fifth-year financial aid to students, and that's something that has happened over time. And that the university itself controls athletics by taking in all revenues into its general accounts and distributing them as it sees fit. Now, that's just wrong, and I don't know where Jay gets his information, but it isn't true. So I'm not sure what that does to further the discussion. I don't think it does much to further the discussion. And to shut down the program and to say it isn't worth having a Division I program in the state of Minnesota is to say that we can't run a clean program, and we can. We do it in every other sport. And to have a couple of individuals who behaved in the same way Luther Darville behaved and are I think dishonored themselves as well as the program, and to allow that to go ahead and to color the way we judge everybody else, if that's Jay's opinion, I simply disagree with him.
What about his observation that you are, or no, a charge that you are creating a buzz in order to distract the public from the investigation, from the cloud?
Well, if Jay thinks we hired a basketball coach to create a buzz, I will tell you that that's absolutely ludicrous. To say that he's a sixth choice is ludicrous too. Every time you go and talk with a basketball coach, and this is probably every time you talk with a CEO of a company about moving from one firm to another, they walk away from it and say, "I was offered the job, but I turned it down." That's the drill. That's the way of saving face. That's the way of making sure that your supporters and the members of your company don't think you ever had a thought about leaving, but that you simply had an obligation to talk with somebody who was offering an opportunity. Now, that's a very unsophisticated view of what happens during a search, to say that this guy was a distant sixth choice. That's not true. I have a hard time understanding how somebody could say that if you finish in the top eight in the NCAA in 1 year and you have a top 10 team or top 20 team lined up for the next year, that somehow you're not an exceptional choice. This guy is. He happened also to be out of town and out of the country, and not somebody we could talk to at the time we were doing our search. And yeah, we did get turned down in one particular case, which gave us the additional time to get to him.
Let's go to Tim on the line from Rogers. Tim, thank you for calling.
Hello, Dr. Enard, I got a comment and a question. First of all, I think we can judge individuals and institutions by how they deal with adversity. And I'm sure you're accustomed to all kinds of criticism. I think the U's done a great job. I think you've done a good job. My comment, my question is, are we going to be able to keep our kids with Coach Bunsen? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
The impression I'm getting is that the kids are very excited about Coach Munson. J.B. Bickerstaff and Kevin Nathaniel are both on the search committee. They both are very solid students. They both are very good basketball players. They are both African-American. And they both decided that this was the guy that should be leading us. And Joel Prisbilli yesterday was very excited, and I saw him again today, and he's looking forward to Coach Munson being on board. My guess is that there will probably be a couple of student athletes who will look to transfer. We've had two, Antoine Broxy and Nick Sinville, who have requested permission to talk with other schools. And for them, Coach Haskins personally was a big part of their decision to come to the University of Minnesota. And there are schools that will not give student athletes a release to leave and go elsewhere, but I personally don't think that that's a positive thing. I think that's doing an injustice to the student athletes. So if they do ask for releases, I would choose to give them the opportunity to move if they wanted to.
And you mentioned the African-American part of this. There were members of the supposedly monolithic black community, you know, which of course has as diverse a range of opinions as the supposedly monolithic white community, but nevertheless, there were calls to hire a black coach, and the U did not do that.
No, I didn't, and frankly, when you look at the lack of diversity among our head coaches, I feel bad about that. I ended up in the search process talking to over 100 coaches, and among the coaches I talked to were a good number of wonderful African-American coaches. I also know that when you're a coach and it is 1 month until you start the school year, and the challenges are presented here that are presented with not knowing what the NCAA sanctions are, that whether you're black or white, if you are a solid, well-qualified coach in a position that you want to be in, unlike Dan Munson, who was willing to try to take a step up to be able to compete at the level he's at right now on an annual basis, then maybe you don't want to move. So when I look at our coaching staff, I'm still going to have as a goal to increase the diversity that that we have in our coaching staff, but I didn't choose Dan Munson because of the color of his skin. I chose him because of the characteristics he has.
Let's go to Cindy in Minneapolis. Thanks for calling, Cindy.
Thank you. I'd just like to ask, is there something in Mr. Munson's contract, sir, that would state if we have an issue of domestic assault again, that we won't have the shame that Mr. Haskins brought with him being on tape trying to convince the victim not to press charges? I'll hang up and listen to Mr. Dean Hart's response, and thank you.
Thank you, Cindy.
There's nothing in Coach Munson's contract that specifically addresses that. There is a university policy that was implemented that does not allow coaches, and frankly, this has not occurred in any other case other than Coach Haskins' case, that does not allow coaches to have contact with victims or alleged victims in a direct fashion. If they are made aware of any cases of assault of any type, they're immediately to turn that over to me, and I am to turn that over to the university, Central University officials and the university police. And so the procedure that's in place would require coaches to follow that. If they didn't follow that, they would obviously be subject to disciplinary action.
Let's go to Robert on the line from Leonard. Hello, Robert.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
I would like to know why there is it necessary to have a $50,000 incentive for the coach to graduate a certain number of players.
It certainly isn't necessary, Robert. The reason it's in there is because that's one of the things we hope to achieve. It's great to have your basketball team go to the Final Four, but in our view, it's just as important to improve your graduation rates. And our graduation rates as an overall athletic department are higher than the student body average, but they're still not good enough. And what we have to do is to try to provide incentives for our coaches, particularly in sports like basketball and football, to raise those graduation rates. It seems to be an effective way of saying to people, we value this just as much as going to the Rose Bowl.
Do you worry, though, that providing a financial incentive for something like this might be too big a temptation for a coach to try to fudge somehow?
Well, I don't know how you fudge graduation. In the end,
you could help players get through courses.
Well, there isn't any way that I know of that a coach could do that without being fired, given the way the contracts are structured. The contract that Coach Munson signed would indicate that if there was a coach or any coaches that were assisting him in the way the academic counseling personnel assisted players in the past, that the head coach would be held accountable for that and would be fired. So I don't think that's going to happen. I do think that it gives coaches, rather than the disincentive, it provides them with a reason to want to see student athletes graduate. So if somebody is selected early for a pro draft, it gives them an incentive to want to bring them back and to see them graduate by going to summer school or something else along the line.
Let's go to Jim on the line from Minneapolis. Jim, thank you for calling Midday.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Dean Hart. First, I'd like to commend...
Jim, can you speak up just a bit?
Yeah, I'd just first like to commend you guys on your choice of a coach. I think he's going to do a great job. But I did have one question, and I know you like to move off this subject, but is it true that the University Athletic Department did send Jan Gingelhoff a letter 6 months after she left the university? And if so, why did they do that?
Well, I don't mind discussing this through as long as people want to discuss it, so I'm not trying to move off the topic. I sent Jan Gingelhoff a letter that disassociated her from the athletic program, and it disassociated her from the athletic program, meaning that even though she wasn't an employee of the university at the time, that she couldn't have any contact with our players because there was an investigation done by our compliance office that determined that she had typed a paper for one of our student athletes. At that time, that was all that I knew. And that was sent to her in October, and the actual typing of the paper took place during the spring quarter, and I'm not sure exactly what the timing was. But that is absolutely true, and again, for those people who like to put forward the conspiracy theory, it's not a real smart thing to do if you know that all sorts of papers are being written by a particular individual for your student athletes, to send her a disassociation letter and to make the copies of that, send copies of that to your basketball coach, the NCAA, and everybody else under the sun, which of course is what I did. So in the end, that was a step to say you can no longer have contact with anybody in our basketball program because you violated an NCAA rule. You knew about this. We were an employee of the department. There's no reason why you should have done it. It was obviously done purposefully, and we simply will not allow you to have any contact with anyone. And that's the most severe penalty that can take place to anyone under NCAA and under the NCAA sanctions that can be put in place.
And you mentioned, we have just about a minute and a half left, you mentioned that you don't expect sanctions from the NCAA and that the U may impose some of its own sanctions on its own basketball program. What might those be?
Well, I do expect that the NCAA would hold us accountable, and there would be sanctions if we did not self-impose, but I think we will self-impose, and it could be the reduction of scholarships over a two-year period of time, maybe one or two. It could be probation over a two- or three-year period of time. It could even be declaring ourselves ineligible for postseason play for a year. And those are all obviously very serious penalties. And they're things that we have to do and want to do rather than waiting for the NCAA to take a look at the report that Mike Glazier is preparing and then to come back to us and make those suggestions. Our goal is to always try to police our own problems, to identify them and to resolve them, and we do that on a daily basis. Again, the disassociation letter to Jan Gingelhoff, which obviously angered her and caused her to do this, was an attempt on our part and on my part specifically to keep her away from the program because she had done something wrong, and she was no longer an employee of the university at that time.
Mr. Deanhart, I appreciate your time.
Thanks, John.
Mark Deanhart, University of Minnesota Athletic Director. Thanks for everybody who called in this hour of Midday.
The New York Times calls François Truffaut one of the most lyrical filmmakers of our time. Find out why. Beginning Friday, July 30th, the Oak Street Cinema proudly presents the Complete Truffaut film series, a retrospective of 23 films from the director who helped create the French New Wave of the 50s and 60s and turned the film industry on its ear. For information, call the Oak Street Cinema at 612-331-3134. NPR members, bring a friend and get 2-for-1 tickets.
6 minutes before noon, time for the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.